Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Anybody that would suggest that we call a truce on the moral issues doesn't understand what America is all about.
And I'm proud of the fact, quite frankly, that I haven't held public office before.
There is a group of individuals who are radical jihadists, and we need to call them by name.
If not, you're going to end up with government that's going to tell us what we can eat and drink and whatever.
And we're off to the races. In case you missed it last night, the first debate of the 2012 presidential election season took place. Five candidates in Greenville, South Carolina, four of them seen as fringe, and one trying to make the leap to the next level. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Good morning, everyone, and good morning to Anna Sale. It's a Free Country's political reporter. Anna watched the debate last night, and she's got a recap on our politics website this morning. Anna, quickly, who took part in this debate, and what can you tell us briefly about them?
Sure. There were five folks who were actually on stage. One of them was Tim Pawlenty, the candidate you mentioned, who's trying to sort of get that name recognition and be seen as a top-tier candidate. The others were, there was Ron Paul, the Texas representative, who came along with his supporters in the crowd like he usually does. Another candidate with libertarian leanings, Gary Johnson, the former New Mexico governor. Rick Santorum, the former Pennsylvania senator, was there, and he certainly had the social conservative cred. You heard it in that tape at the top of the show. And then there was Herman Cain, the former CEO of Godfather's Pizza, who was a crowd favorite. But if you watched the debate, you probably knew who Herman Cain was to begin with, because this was Cinco de Mayo. It's more a litmus test for whether you're a political junkie or not, rather than how much this is actually going to mean for the Republican field.
And we want our listeners to call in if they watched the debate last night. Give us a call, left, right, and center. But in particular, if you are a Republican primary voter, let us know what you thought. 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. I hope we hear from some of those political junkies, Anna Sale. And going into the debate, Anna, so many people thought that the candidates were simply hoping not to screw it up, not to say something that would land them in hot water the next day. So did the moderators do a good job of actually pressing them on the issues, forcing them into a real conversation, a real debate?
Well, this was organized by Fox News along with the South Carolina Republican Party, and there was some chatter yesterday, some criticism from other media organizations about the way that they had shut out still photographers, et cetera. But the Fox News reporters and anchors did a fine job, I thought, of moderating the debate. Their questions were pointed. They were well-researched. They went back in the candidates' records and asked them questions. For example, Tim Pawlenty, a supporter of cap-and-trade legislation when he was governor of Minnesota. That's not a position he wants to claim now that he's going for the Republican nomination. And they not only asked him about that, they played a clip from a campaign ad that Tim Pawlenty appeared in on the cap and trade issue. And when they said they were going to that video, actually, Tim Pawlenty just sort of said, do we have to? But moments later, he was saying, look, this was a mistake. This was wrong. And he actually turned it to use it as an example of his long record of public service, that because he's had so many years of executive experience, there's certain to be one mistake or two.
During the live chat, which we had on It's a Free Country last night, you mentioned that you were getting instant response emails from the DNC, all of them about Pawlenty. Is he the only one Democrats are taking seriously? And what was their critique? What were their comments?
Well, Tim Pawlenty on stage last night was certainly the candidate that is thought to have the best shot at the Republican nomination, and that was clear from the DNC emails. They were both fact-checking what they thought misrepresentations of Obama's record, and then they were criticizing Pawlenty's record in Minnesota, and that's something we'll probably hear about more, whether he left the state in good shape financially when he left the governor's mansion. There, Tim Pawlenty was asked whether he set them up to have a deficit because he refused to raise taxes. There's sort of a little back and forth about the accounting tricks used in Minnesota budgeting, but that's his record is going to get closer look.
Yeah, and which sort of gives us the long view and the bigger context, which leads me to the question of the field, the bigger field. Did Mitt Romney and the other candidates make the right decision in skipping the event?
Well, they skipped the event in person, but they certainly were there on stage. There was actually a line of questioning when the candidates who were there were asked about the candidates who weren't there, which definitely showed me this felt like this debate was a little early. It felt like the crowd, the field is just a little too fuzzy. It's not clear what the issues are going to be. And so there was a whole conversation about drug policy, for example, last night, whether heroin should be legal. That's probably not something that you're going to hear a lot about as the Republican debates continue. But Mitt Romney certainly, he had a presence there, and because he wasn't there, it makes him look sort of less desperate for the name recognition, the camera time, and sort of even more, I think, firms up his position as the forerunner.
All right. Well, Anna, thank you so much for your reporting. And our listeners can read Anna's piece, Five Things We Learned from the GOP Debate, the First Debate, at itsafreecountry.org.
Thanks, Jamie.
I am Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. And our listeners who watch the debate should give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. I am so pleased now to welcome two guests to analyze last night's debate. I'm joined now by Raihan Salam. He is a conservative author and journalist, and he writes at the National Review, the Daily Beast, and elsewhere. In fact, you're all over the place online. You're the co-author of Grand New Party, How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream. Hopefully, in the course of this conversation, we can learn how to save the American dream as well as some other things as well. And we have on the phone Charles Dunn, who is a professor of government at Regent University, Christian Conservative University in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and also taught at Clemson University for 25 years in South Carolina, served as a political analyst for WYFF-TV. Chuck, thank you for joining us.
I'm glad to be with you.
So let's start where they started last night, in foreign policy. And we'll start there. Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty got the first chance to lay out his critique of President Obama in the wake of the bin Laden killing. Gentlemen, take a listen to this.
He did a good job, and I tip my cap to him in that moment. But that moment is not the sum total of America's foreign policy. He's made a number of other decisions relating to our security here and around the world that I don't agree with. And in fact, if it turns out that many of the techniques that he criticized during the campaign led to Osama bin Laden's being identified and killed, he should be asked to explain whether he does or doesn't support those techniques. But just to give you one example, in Libya, he made a decision to subordinate our decision-making to the United Nations. I don't agree with that at all. If he says Gaddafi must go, he needs to maintain the options to make Gaddafi go, and he didn't do that.
All right, so let's start here in our New York studio, and then I'll come out to you, Chuck, there in South Carolina. Was that an effective critique in your view?
I think it was an effective critique given the audience. I think you have to understand that the candidates who are there right now are making an assumption that as strong as President Obama looks right now, he's going to look weaker come November of 2012. And so right now, rather than craft a foreign policy message that's going to resonate with the wider public, they're attempting to craft a message that's going to connect with Republican primary voters. And this talk of enhanced interrogation techniques and this talk of subordinating the United States to the United Nations, that's the kind of thing that is potentially going to resonate with those primary voters. But if Tim Pawlenty is hoping to reach a wider audience, he's going to have to talk about it in a somewhat different way.
And Chuck, you are now in Virginia. You were in South Carolina for so long. You are imprinted there in my mind. But there in Virginia, what's your thought on that critique? Was it effective on the part of Pawlenty, or do you agree that he needs to broaden his message?
I thought he did exactly what he should do last night. Ronald Reagan is the gold standard for Republican presidential candidates and indeed for a large segment of the American electorate generally. So of all the five candidates last night, who measured up best to the Reagan gold standard? Well, Tim Pawlenty did, and one of the reasons he did is that first he took the high road with regard to President Obama and the killing of the worst terrorist we've seen in modern history. And then he laid out his differences with President Obama. That's precisely the way Ronald Reagan would have gone about it. So I give him high marks for what he did.
All right. Well, let's then talk about another reference Pawlenty made, and you bring this up, the enhanced interrogation techniques. This was later in the night. The moderators asked for a show of hands. Who would support the use of waterboarding in certain cases? We had five candidates on the stage. Three of the five raised their hands, with the two libertarians, Paul and Johnson, not agreeing. And this was met by great applause in the arena. Starting here, what do you make of that moment, since you raised this issue of enhanced interrogation techniques?
Well, I think that, unfortunately, it's an issue that's extremely complicated, and it's an issue that's very difficult to discuss in the context of a Republican primary debate. For example, there are many who have noted that President Obama has focused more on killing terrorists in the hills of Pakistan and the borderlands between Pakistan and Afghanistan. Now, on one level, this could make him seem more aggressive, more tough. On the other hand, many believe that this means that he is not actually driving information about how the al-Qaeda network is continuing to evolve, whereas in contrast, President Bush seized large numbers of enemy combatants. This was something that was potentially very risky, yet the idea was that they did this to garner information. Now, the argument advanced by some people on the right, and whether or not it's true is an open question, is the idea that enhanced interrogation techniques help secure the cooperation that later allowed you to garner information regarding these wider plots. We've heard about how Osama bin Laden capturing him required first learning the nickname of a courier, then learning his actual name. It was a steady process that required many different pieces of information from many different people.
Chuck, we do have a note from many of our chatters last night. You know, there was an online chat on itsafreecountry.com that happened contemporaneously. That's our political website, contemporaneously with the debate, that Reagan's name hardly came up in the course of the debate. What do you make of that? Is that simply the passage of time? Is it because it was an early debate and these candidates are not perhaps the candidates who will be the main candidates when the election really heats up? Since you raise Ronald Reagan as still a significant figure in the Republican Party, what do you make of that fact?
It's early in the season. These candidates missed an opportunity to register with that audience. The name Ronald Reagan resonates with Republicans of all persuasions. One of the things that he did for the Republican Party, indeed for the nation, is he understood the diversity among conservatives. You know, they're religious, political, economic, social, international conservatives. He was able to weave them together into a meaningful mosaic that allowed him to win the presidency and then govern as a center-right president. So if there was a missed opportunity last night, that was the big missed opportunity of identifying oneself as a candidate with Ronald Reagan. I think we will see that change as time goes on in these debates.
We did not just hear from Pawlenty on foreign policy. We did not just have a show of hands. We also heard from Ron Paul on this question of interrogation techniques. Gentlemen, take a listen.
We went to Afghanistan to get him, and he hasn't been there. Now that he's killed, boy, it is a wonderful time for this country now to reassess it and get the troops out of Afghanistan and end that war that hasn't helped us and hasn't helped anybody in the Middle East.
All right, and so Ron Paul saying that strategic techniques, strategic foreign policy planning, rather than our larger military strategy in Afghanistan, Iraq. This has been his mantra all along, Raihan. Is that line of thinking going to influence the greater debate within the Republican Party at all? And let's talk about the Tea Party and their position, their foreign policy. Do they have a foreign policy? Where do you see the conversation going forward for the Republican Party as the election moves ahead?
I think that what you really heard there was extraordinary enthusiastic applause from a Republican audience for what Ron Paul said regarding Afghanistan. You saw hints of this earlier on. For example, many members of Congress, like Representative Jason Chaffetz, have said that we need to get out of Afghanistan because, given the very restrictive rules of engagement, we can't accomplish our central objectives. I think that among many Americans, the killing of Osama bin Laden represents an opportunity to start anew, to start fresh, and to reframe U.S. foreign policy. I think that what you're going to see happen is you're going to see a new entrant in the Republican presidential race who is going to be a more mainstream candidate who will take a position that will be a softer line version of what Ron Paul had said. With regard to the broader Tea Party, I think that what you have to keep in mind is that conservatives, grassroots conservatives, have a nationalist bent, and many of them embrace nation building primarily because President Bush embraced nation building, and there was a view that this was the way to defeat our enemies. It wasn't an intrinsic support for the idea of nation building. And I think that the natural impulse is to oppose it and to believe that our foreign policy should be about killing our enemies first and foremost, rather than about building democracy in other countries.
Chuck, let me jump out to you on a slightly different note. Were you surprised how little conversation there was on other issues, economic issues, jobs? Did anyone distinguish themselves on that front?
With regard to Boeing and jobs in South Carolina, Tim Pawlenty scored early in the debate on that one. And in the state of South Carolina, that's one of the biggest issues right now, NLRB versus Boeing and the location of the new Boeing plant in South Carolina. So if anyone won on the issue of job creation, it was Pawlenty, because the question he received and how he handled it. So the local audience there, that was very important, but it was important beyond South Carolina. South Carolina is the gateway to the South. It's number three, Iowa, New Hampshire, and then South Carolina. South Carolina is exceedingly important because of the very large share of delegate strength from the South at the Republican National Convention, and then, of course, the largest single block of Electoral College votes is from the South of any region in the country. So in the South, where there are so many right-to-work states, Pawlenty scored. And thus, I would say, while there wasn't as much discussion of the overall jobs issue, as you pointed out, when it did come up, Pawlenty was the winner.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. We're talking about the first of what I would presuppose will be many Republican debates, though that remains to be seen. Five GOP hopefuls debated last night, and we are dissecting what we heard. And you mentioned the conversation about some social issues, though much focus on foreign policy last night. Let me ask you both to take a listen to former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, who was asked about social issues.
A man who may join you at some point in the GOP primary, Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels, says Republican candidates should, quote, declare a truce on social issues in the next election. Is he right? Are you willing to tone down your positions on abortion and homosexuality in an effort to reach more voters and to help the GOP coalesce behind a more fiscally focused platform?
I think anybody that would suggest that we call a truce on the moral issues doesn't understand what America is all about. America is a...
So let me ask you both, Ryan, I'll ask you first, with the economy still the key issue and last night's debate focused mostly on foreign policy, what will be the role of issues like gay marriage and abortion for Republicans going forward?
I think that abortion is going to be an issue where even the most moderate candidate who has taken somewhat seriously, John Huntsman, the former governor of Utah and the until recently the ambassador to China, is pro-life. And I think that when you're looking at gay marriage and gay rights, I think that you're going to see that fade as an issue markedly relative to where it had been, certainly in 2004 and 2008. In large part because Republican primary voters, like the country as a whole, have moved on those issues to some degree. I also just want to throw out that I think that Rick Santorum was incredibly unfair to Mitch Daniels on that. And I also think that Mitch Daniels recently, in his own state of Indiana, has signed legislation regarding Planned Parenthood that I think was embraced by many social conservatives and demonstrates that Santorum's characterization was far off the mark.
Well, Mitch Daniels may have an opportunity to respond. The next big event on the circuit is June 16th at the Republican Leadership Conference. That's in New Orleans. John Huntsman joined the lineup yesterday. Mike Huckabee, Newt Gingrich, Michelle Bachmann, Ron Paul, Rick Santorum, and Herman Cain are already scheduled. Chuck Dunn, what do you expect between now and then?
I expect that we'll see Tim Pawlenty continue to rise. He is what I call the most important sleeper in the race. He has good ties to all segments of conservatives and in the Republican Party. He is bright. He's articulate. He doesn't have foot and mouth disease. Last night he handled the most difficult questions and handled them well. So I think that we'll see Pawlenty, who does have presidential presence, begin to rise. Last night was like a, you know, spring training, and the second teamers, second stringers, and rookies showed up. Out of those who showed up, Pawlenty was clearly the winner. Now when we move on to what we'll call the major leaguers coming in, Romney, Huckabee, Gingrich, Romney, you know, all, I think Pawlenty has demonstrated that he can play with them in the big time.
Well,
so between now and then, watch for the rise of Pawlenty.
I'm a big baseball fan, so I appreciate your analogies. I have to say that the post-debate show, I can't think of a good baseball analogy for the post-debate show. I guess it would be the locker room, right? I don't know if you watched it, Raihan. I'm not sure if you watched it with Frank Luntz, but he gathered a group of Republican voters who overwhelmingly said that they'd been impressed by none other than former pizza entrepreneur Herman Cain. Here's a taste of Cain, and then let's hear from you, Raihan, if we should read anything into Frank Luntz's focus group.
One of the biggest problems we have with this country right now today is too much government intervention in trying to tell businesses how to do what they do best, which is create jobs. Government doesn't create jobs. Businesses create jobs. We need to get government out of the way.
All right. So what do you say, Ryan? Serious candidate?
You know what? There have been so many surprises in American politics and in politics in democratic countries around the world over the last year. People coming from completely out of left field, people who are unfamiliar faces, catching like lightning. And I think the thing to keep in mind about Herman Cain is that he is a professional motivational speaker who has an incredibly compelling personal story. Throughout the debate, you first saw him on a kind of shaky, awkward footing, not really finding his voice, and then slowly he picked up steam and he really connected with people. One of the things that he kept saying towards the end of the debate is that I have a plan. He did not explicitly describe this plan. He didn't really have to, and he didn't really have the time to describe that plan. And so I think that there's going to be a where's the beef question. If Herman Cain can actually develop a compelling plan, and if he can learn to talk about it effectively, I think that he is an incredibly effective public performer, and I wouldn't be surprised if he had a longer shelf life.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. We'll leave it there, and we will wait, see, and watch. I want to say a big thank you to Chuck Dunn, who joined us from Virginia. Raihan Salam, you can check him out at The Daily Beast, The National Review, and also his book, Grand New Party. Thank you, gentlemen, both.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. Coming up next, we will take a look at the rent, property taxes, and real estate.